Hi, this is the voice, Michael Shavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAoddsbreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast, presented by Five Dime Sportsbook and Countermove, your home for fantasy MMA. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts oddsmaker Nick Kalikas to break down this Saturday's UFC Fight Night 77 event, which takes place in Sao Paulo, Brazil. If you're unfamiliar with our format, myself and Nick will be breaking down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Briefly looking back at our last event, our premium package bets for UFC Fight Night went 2-0-1 to win 4 units overall. We won our bets on Luis Smoka and the under 2.5 rounds total for the Ciri de los Reyes fight, while our underdog bet on Darren Till ended up being a push after the fight was ruled a draw. We also lost our 1-unit free bet on the Bush McClellan under 2.5 rounds total by a little over 2 minutes. Back to the present. UFC Fight Night 77 features a 13-fight card in total and will be aired on Fox Sports 1 and UFC Fight Pass this Saturday night. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking off the preliminary card is most likely a bantamweight fight between Bruno Correa, who is 4-0, and Matheus Nicolau, who is 10-1. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how's the public shifted things so far?
I open Nicolau -245, the comeback on Correa +175. Right now, according to our sponsor, fivedimes.eu, we are seeing Nicolau -180. The comeback on Correa is currently at +150. So action coming in on the dog a little bit. Nothing too crazy, but still a little bit more dog action coming in. Both of these guys are actually tough Brazil 4 semifinalists. Both of them obviously losing and not making the finals. But to be honest with you, they both have some talent. I was impressed looking back again and going through footage of these guys, because you could basically see that both of them are very young prospects, 24 years old for Bruno Correa and 22 years old for Nicolau. So, I mean, these guys have a well-rounded skill set, each one of them, and they're going to keep on improving. So I was very impressed, honestly. And I think, like Brian said, we're not sure if this is going to be a bantamweight or if it's going to be a flyweight. The UFC is listing this right now at bantamweight, but I'm seeing some places that also have it at flyweight. Regardless, both these guys realistically should be fighting at flyweight, but on the show, Tough Brazil 4, they were at bantamweight. So I don't think either guy's going to have a significant advantage. It doesn't matter what weight class this fight does take place. So it's going to be a competitive matchup, no doubt about it. Getting into it, Correa a little bit. He's a talented fighter, has a lot of potential, as I just mentioned. Has a lot of power on the feet. I mean, he really goes for it. He's an aggressive fighter, mixes his striking attack up well between his boxing and kicks. He does have some wrestling as well. He likes to take the fight to the floor. Once on top, on the ground, he has pretty good ground and pound, and he can also beat you by submission. So very impressive. But the problem with Correa is his defense. I mean, his aggression does lead to openings, and on the ground especially at times, he loses position, makes some mistakes, and that could seriously cost him. He does tend to slow down a little bit. So there is some question marks in some areas that Correa definitely has to improve, but he is a very talented fighter, and his aggression is kind of what his flaw and best attributes are, if that makes sense. I mean, his aggression does bode well for him typically because he overwhelms his opponents a lot, and this could come in handy here because Nicolau, on the other hand, you can say a lot of the same things. He's a talented young prospect as well. He has very nice striking technique. I think he's more technical than Correa. Correa is a little bit more aggressive, more of the brawler type of fighter, although he does have some technique to go along with that as well. But Nicolau is still a little bit more technical, very nice striking technique. He counters really well. He's light on his feet, sets things up well with a jab, so you like to see that. And his takedown defense, what I was impressed with, is very solid. Now, he does get put on his back from time to time, but his ability to scramble out of bad positions is very impressive. He doesn't look for takedowns as often as you like to see, but he does, again, tend to even scramble on top, even if he's on the ground at all. In a bad position, he ends up in top position, and from the top, he's pretty effective with ground and pound. And again, he can also finish you by sub. So both these guys have some talent. I'm going to lean a little bit more towards Nicolau in this spot here because I do think defensively he's a little bit more sound. I don't expect him to make as many mistakes. The only problem with Nicolau is that from time to time, he does get a little tentative. So the aggression that I was referring to with Correa could come in handy. He could steal a decision here. But overall, I mean, I'm going to go with a guy that's more technically sound and more defensively sound as well. And I do think Nicolau has a bright future. probably in the flyweight division of the UFC. So both these guys are skilled. Both these guys, I'm looking forward to this fight, believe it or not. It is on Fight Pass and nobody's going to be really talking about it, but this could be probably one of the better fights on the card.
Yeah, in the end, I think both of these guys will be in the flyweight division. We're still not 100% sure whether this fight is going to be at bantamweight or flyweight. Both guys would be pretty big-sized flyweights, but they both competed in the bantamweight division on The Ultimate Fighter Brazil Season 4, and they were both excellent, actually. Nicolau actually defeated the eventual winner in the quarterfinals, but then Vieira ended up getting another shot, and then he went right through and ended up winning the whole show. But and Correa, on the other hand, he is an excellent fighter as well. He showcased some excellent kicks. He was a guy that was a big focus on the show, showcased some Taekwondo ability and surprising submission. He was a lot better on the ground than a lot of people thought he would be. He was able to pick up a submission victory in the quarterfinals of the show. So the guy is very talented, very dangerous. But I think Nicolau is a little bit more well-rounded. And Nicolau was a little bit more technical with his pure boxing. And I think the other thing that you have to favor Nicolau with is the fact that he has more experience. He's been in there against more fighters, a little bit tougher opponents. And the fact that Nicolau trains out of Nova Unia, which is the best gym in Brazil. So he does have a lot of small advantages. But again, both these guys are very young, 22 years old, 24 years old. I think they're welcome additions to the lighter weight classes in the UFC. That being said, I do think this is Nicolau's fight to lose. Correa does have a puncher's chance. He could outwork Nicolau if he can land some big, heavy kicks. Maybe he could hurt him. Maybe he can put him away. But I don't see Correa submitting him. And I'm not really sure I see Correa getting a decision either. I think Nicolau can, as long as he doesn't sit back and let Correa dictate everything, then this is Nicolau's fight to lose. So I'm going to pick him. Now moving on to the bantamweight division, we have Pedro Munhoz, who is 12-1, taking on Jimmy Rivera, who is 17-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I open Munhoz -210, the comeback on Rivera +160. Since that time, the line has been bet down a little bit. It's now Munhoz -180, the comeback on Rivera is +150. So +160 to +150 drop on the dog, not too bad. Line margins have tightened up a little bit. More of the sports books across the board, looking at the Don Best screen right now, are adding the lines as we speak. So margins will continue to get tighter and limits, of course, will continue to get bigger as well. So right now, this is an awesome fight. I mean, no doubt about it, because you got two of the guys that are up and coming fighters. A lot of people are looking forward to that's been a little bit hyped along the way. Even Rivera, he's had one fight in the UFC. Of course, he did have an experience in Tough. Didn't bode too well for him back in the day. He lost to Bermudez by knockout. But outside of that, I mean, there has been some buzz and some hype around Rivera. And of course, Munhoz, again, he's one of these guys out of Black House that from the Access TV cards, I mean, he's been a warrior there, and he had a lot of hype and buzz around him there. And then he made a pretty successful debut in the UFC, even though, I mean, he lost to Sansao and it was a fair decision. He got beaten that day, but still, I mean, he was impressive since that time. And I think a lot of people see the potential Munhoz as well. So you have two guys that people expect to kind of climb the ladder at 135 and potentially make a title run. I got to lean a little bit towards Munhoz at this point. I think he is more well-rounded. He continues to get a little bit better. Of course, I mean, his biggest strength is his ground game. I mean, he has a nasty submission game. He can finish fighters that you wouldn't expect him to finish. He's that good and that slick on the ground. But he also has a lot of power on the feet. Especially he's getting a little bit more confidence, and he's been able to use this stand-up game, because a lot of people are expecting him to shoot, take the fight to the ground. So he has the ability to stay up and do some damage on the feet. And then, of course, on the ground, like I said, he can finish the fight. And that's his biggest advantage over Rivera. Rivera's not going to be an easy guy to take down, though. I mean, he's an accomplished high school wrestler. It's actually better. His wrestling is better than even that sounds. I know a lot of people these days are more used to seeing collegiate high school college All-Americans. So Rivera doesn't have those credentials, but still, I mean, he has very good wrestling, well enough to compete with the best of them here at 135 as well. But he uses that wrestling more to keep the fight upright and basically to strike with people. He's from that Tiger Schulman's camp, so a lot of those guys prefer to strike, and they're very good at it, very technical. Rivera is another one of those guys, has a lot of power to go along with it, good kicks, solid boxing. And again, he basically trains, and to me, he reminds me a lot of Lyman Good. You know, he has training partners like that, and he's kind of a mini version of that. Good speed and power to go along with it. So he does have potential, and he made his successful UFC debut against Marcus Brimage, which was very impressive because we all know how good Brimage can be as well. So, I mean, knocking out Brimage and getting your second fight, being a guy like Munoz, that tells you where the UFC sees this guy. They know that he has a lot of potential. So this is going to be an awesome fight. And I think if he hits the scorecards, there's some concern here because the judges could side with Rivera, because I think in the stand-up realm, he's going to be maybe a little bit busier, a little bit more active, and he could have a slight advantage here. But overall, I still got to lean a little bit more towards Munoz because he is the more complete fighter. I think Munoz is a little bit more solid, meaning that, you know, Rivera has been knocked out in the past. I think his defense is pretty solid overall, but Munoz, he's been chin checked before. I mean, he has a granite chin. I do like that for him. And I know that his sub defense, even though Rivera hasn't been subbed in his career yet, is a little bit better as well. So I think defensively, Munoz is more sound, and I think he has more potential to finish the fight as well. So I have to lean towards Munoz in this fight. I do think he gets the win.
Yeah, this is a terrific matchup, and it's kind of shocking to me to see it so buried down on the preliminary card. But Pedro Munoz and Jimmy Rivera are excellent prospects in the UFC bantamweight division. I mean, Rivera hasn't lost a professional bout since 2008, and Munoz's only loss was in his UFC debut on super short notice against, you know, currently a top three bantamweight on the roster. So, I mean, both guys are clearly top of the food chain in terms of prospects. Now, Rivera, while he hasn't lost in about 7 years professionally, he did compete on The Ultimate Fighter. He moved up a weight class and then ended up losing to Dennis Bermudez in the opening bout to get onto the show. So that was a bit of a shocker. But again, that was at featherweight. So I'm not going to give him too much trouble for losing via TKO to a guy that's a top 15 UFC featherweight right now. But Munoz, on the other hand, I think the biggest difference between these guys is the fact that Munoz is a little bit more well-rounded. While Rivera does have a little bit of wrestling, for the most part, he likes to stand and bang, and he is an excellent striker. Munoz has developing striking, and he can put people away, as evidenced by his victory over Matt Hobart, which was primarily on the feet. But I do think that Munoz's most dangerous part of his game is still his absolutely elite, elite ground game. So if this fight ends up on the ground, I definitely see Pedro Munoz getting the better of it. But if it stays standing, while Munoz has improved, I think it's going to be a lot more competitive. Jimmy Rivera is an excellent striker, has good power, and while Munoz does have that improvement, I mean, he has been working with Kings MMA and those guys, so I expect him to be competitive on the feet, but I don't think it's a blowout there. So Rivera should be able to hold his own if Munoz can't get this fight to the ground. So it's going to all be about whether or not Munoz can use the extra dynamics of his game, implement them, and then he'll probably win convincingly. But if this fight stays standing for all three rounds, it's a toss-up. So it's a bit tricky, but I do favor Pedro Munoz. I think he holds his own on the feet long enough to find an opening to get it to the ground, and from there he either wins a decision or wins by submission. So my pick is Pedro Munoz. Now moving up to the welterweight division, we have Viscardi Andrade, who is 17-7, taking on Gassan Umalatov, who is 15-4-1. Now, Nick, where'd you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I put Umalatov -165, the comeback on Andrade +125. Right now, looking over five dimes, it is Umalatov -125. The comeback is Andrade +105. So line has dropped a little bit, more action coming in on the dog Andrade here. It is in Brazil. Umalatov has basically, he's coming off a decision loss to Pendred, and I think that's causing his stock and his credibility to drop a little bit. No disrespect to Pendred, but I think a lot of the bettors out there, I mean, especially since he's got knocked out by Breeze as well recently, just don't have a lot of faith or a lot of respect for Pendred's ability. And Umalatov, even though he should have won that fight against Pendred, I think that, you know, the judges and most of you out there probably realize that as well, shafted Umalatov there, and Pendred shouldn't have won that fight still. I mean, it was competitive enough that they could mess it up. So it doesn't really sit well with the bettors, I think. And Andrade has a ton of knockout power, and he's a very well-rounded fighter. So I think a lot of people are just banking on the fact that Andrade is going to be able to, if Pendred was able to hang with Umalatov, Andrade should be able to have any problems. That's why they're coming in that way. I don't really agree with that. I think Andrade is a very talented fighter. He definitely has a lot of power in the feet, underrated. He's got a 4-inch reach advantage in this fight as well. But the problem is he's a little wild, his aggression on the feet as well. I mean, he's dangerous because of that aspect, but again, he tends to leave a little bit openings. And then if he doesn't get the job done, I mean, obviously, if you look at the Musoki fight in his last fight as well, he had a chance to finish Musoki. Was very close early on in that fight, didn't get the job done, and then actually ended up losing a decision there because he started to slow down. So that is the fighter that you see in Andrade. I mean, that's who usually shows up. Make no mistake about that. And he's also been out since February of 2014, since that loss to Musoke. So there's a lot of question marks around Andrade, but he is going to be dangerous, and Umolotov is going to have to be very careful early on. But I think if once Umolotov does get past that first round, I think he is going to win round two, round three, a little bit more clear and decisive as well. I mean, Umolotov has a very well-rounded game in his own right. He could wrestle. He could strike. His striking's improving, you know, fight by fight. I think it's getting better. He doesn't have that crazy knockout power that you kind of want to see in a fighter, but he's still active enough that he can outpoint you on the feet. He could do some damage along the way. And then he's smart enough. His fight IQ overall is pretty intelligent. He knows when to take the fight to the ground or when to clinch up as well. So I think what's going to happen here is it's going to be a very competitive fight early on, but Umolotov's going to start pulling away. And I think in round two and round three, he's probably going to win. We could see a stoppage here either way, but I think more than likely we'll see Umolotov win on the scorecard. So I'm going to have to lean with him. I think that the early action right now coming in on Andrade, I understand it, but I do think it's wrong.
Yeah, this fight's a bit tricky. I mean, Andrade looked terrific in his debut in the UFC, and then his last one, you know, he slowed down a little bit and ended up losing. Umolotov, on the other hand, the worst thing he had going for him was luck. I mean, he faced Cathal Pendred. Clearly, in my opinion, won that fight. I mean, we bet Umolotov as an underdog, and then he lost a decision. It was not quite as bad as Pendred's decision over Sean Spencer, but I mean, it was right up there in terms of the worst decisions of Cathal Pendred's career that he's won. Now, Umolotov is a very solid technical striker. Now, the big difference between these guys is the fact that Andrade is going to have an advantage in terms of size and reach. Umolotov has never been a huge welterweight. He's a bit smaller on the smaller end. So he's going to be giving up about 4 inches in reach, an inch or two in height. So Andrade, if Andrade was a really technical striker, he could be able to, you know, keep Umolotov at the end of his jab. But that's really not the type of fighter he is. He's a guy that's more about explosive power, and he just tries to put you away, and he's probably going to have about a round and a half to do it. And if Umolotov weathers that storm, then I see him at least winning the last two rounds. Umolotov is an excellent technical striker, very good counter striker. So if Andrade is a little wild and reckless, I can see Umolotov completely picking him apart. Andrade is decent on the ground as well, so he could try to get this fight to the canvas and put Umolotov on his back. But again, Umolotov knows what he's doing there. And while he's not a huge submission threat, he is able to get back to his feet. So as long as Umolotov is able to not get finished quickly by Andrade, then I see him handling the Brazilian and then completely dominating as the fight wears on and Andrade starts to tire. So I like Usman Umolotov here, and I think he picks up a decision win or maybe a late knockout. Now moving on to the first fight on the Fox Sports 1 prelims, we have a featherweight contest between Kevin Souza, who is 19-3, and Chaz Skelly, who is 14-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I up at Skelly -270, the comeback on Souza +190, and this line has dropped quite a bit. It's now Skelly -160, the comeback on Souza is +140. So a lot of action coming in on the Brazilian dog here. A little bit surprising in some ways because, I mean, Souza, I mean, he's performed really well, especially in his last fight. I mean, how impressive was that? I mean, he won that fight as he should have early. I mean, he had such a significant reach advantage over Kakuno, and it wasn't really a big shock to anybody, but he got the job done. He was supposed to win that way, and basically he did. So, that was a great win for him. Then against Adiva, though, he did show some signs of weakness a little bit there. Adiva, in my opinion, is okay, probably a little underrated, but Adiva gave Souza all he can handle. Now, styles make fights, and this is not the type of fight that Adiva was bringing to Souza here. So Skelly, stylistically, is a different type of fighter, and what he does best is actually wrestle, get the fight to the floor, and then obviously use his grappling and his submission game to end fights. And that's exactly what Souza does not want to see. So even though Adiva was another striker and he matched up well with him, and this is a different fight. Skelly still matches up really well here. So I think that's his path to victory. Skelly knows it as well. He's done interviews. I mean, even on our site, and he's clearly stated that, you know, Sosa's biggest weakness is probably the ground, and he's going to try to exploit that. I think that's the way to go, because on the feet, Sosa definitely has a significant advantage. His strike defense is a little bit of a concern. Again, I mean, it seems to be a trend on this card as well, because he does leave many openings. I mean, offensively, the guy is definitely talented, but defensively, he does get tagged more than you'd like to see. Is Skelly going to be able to land and do significant damage on the feet? He does have a little bit of power. His stand-up is okay, but again, Sosa has the bigger advantage for sure on the feet, and he's starting to get better at the takedown defense as well. I mean, that's one thing that he's been drilling, and you can see that he's definitely game, and he's not an easy guy to take down. So it's not going to be a walk in the park for Skelly to get those takedowns and to control Sosa on the ground for sure, but that's what he's going to go after, and I think he's going to be successful doing so. So I'm going to lean more towards Skelly here as well. I think the early action on Sosa, I could respect it, but I just think stylistically this is a nightmare matchup for Sosa, because Skelly's good enough on the ground. I mean, his submission game, once he gets to the floor, I think he could finish the fight there as well. So I do think the Skelly does find his way to the ground here, probably wins this fight by submission, and he probably wins it between maybe round one, early round two. He gets the job done, and that's around that area. Possibly grinds out a decision win as well. I wouldn't be surprised if he does that. But as the fight goes, one thing that we have seen in Skelly, he does tend to slow down. Now, again, you can say what you will about, I mean, him, he's taking some fights on short notice or taking fights, you know, soon in between fights or whatnot. But still, I mean, Skelly does tend to slow down. So regardless, we have seen that before. And I am a little concerned, because if he's not able to get Sosa to the ground, say in round two and round three, he starts struggling a little bit getting to the ground, Sosa could definitely end the fight by knockout here against Skelly. So he has to be cautious that way. But realistically, more times than not, it's your typical striker versus grappler matchup. And I got to go with the grappler here, because I do think he can exploit Sosa on the ground. And I think that's the way it's going to go. So my official pick is going to be Skelly to get the job done here.
Yeah, one of Kevin Sousa's biggest advantages over his opponents typically is his extremely long reach and tall height and his ability to utilize those on the feet. And I think that that's going to actually hurt him here against Skelly. Now, Skelly isn't that much smaller than Sousa, but Skelly can drop down and really take advantage of Sousa's high center of gravity. Because all he's got to do is get in there, topple Sousa over, and I don't see Sousa being able to get up easily against, you know, a very, very tenacious grappler. Now, Skelly, you know, he's that all-American style wrestler. He just gets in there, very Darren Elkins-like, just tenacious, goes after you, wears you down, and either picks up a TKO or a submission, or he's content to ride out a decision if he can't finish you. And Sousa, on the other hand, he's a guy that, you know, can get in firefights on the feet, or he can pick you apart a little bit, but for the most part, I would say 90% of his game or more is exclusively about putting away his opponents on the feet. So Skelly, he's a bit of a fish out of the water on the feet. He's not great there. He's got a little bit of power, but again, he does not want to be standing there and trading with Kevin Sousa for extended periods of time. So I think what's going to happen here is Skelly is going to quickly close the distance. He's either going to put Sousa against the fence, or he's going to take him down. And when he gets him down, he's going to keep him there and smother him. And as Nick mentioned, he does tire a little bit, but he has that mental toughness that allows him to dig deep and just keep pushing anyway through being tired. He's definitely one of those guys that just can go and go and go despite exhaustion. And, you know, honestly, in his UFC debut, the one career loss he had was against Mirsad Bektik, who is one of the best featherweights in the entire roster, in my opinion. So I think Sousa's going to have his hands full here, and unless Sousa can somehow either get back to his feet or keep this fight standing for extended periods of time, I see Chaz Skelly running away with this one. So Chaz Skelly will be my pick. Now, sticking with the featherweight division, we have a veteran matchup between Clay Guida, who is 32-12, against Thiago Tavares, who is 23-6-1. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I open at Guida minus 175 to come back on Tavares plus 135. And right now, looking over at Five Dimes, it is currently Guida minus 165, Tavares plus 145. So line margins, again, kind of tighten up a little bit here on this fight as well. And a little bit of two-way action coming in back and forth. So we're not going to see a lot of significant movement. And it is going to be a competitive close fight. I mean, you got to lean towards Guida here for sure. because of his wrestling, because of the way he just comes in, brings that tenacity every fight. You know he's going to be aggressive. He's going to be relentless, nonstop, in your face, looking for takedowns, just smothering you as well. He just has to be careful here, honestly, because Tavares, I mean, if you look at the striking, I think Tavares actually has better striking technique. I think Tavares obviously has better jiu-jitsu on the ground as well. He's got underrated wrestling. I mean, he's just a very solid overall fighter. But the problem with Tavares is that chin is definitely a huge concern. And in this matchup against Guida, even though Tavares does have good wrestling in his own right, I mean, he should struggle, and Guida probably will control the cage here and get Tavares on his back and kind of grind him out along the way. But Tavares is going to have to look for those subs off his back. I think he's going to have to look to reverse position and get on top, maybe take Guida's back. And I think that's going to be his path to victory. I think the best way for Tavares to win this fight is by submitting Guida. And that's not an easy thing to do. I mean, historically, if you look back through his whole career, Guida's been subbed several times, but his sub defense is actually better in most cases than that, honestly. And especially through the years, it's gotten better and better, you know, throughout his UFC career. I know you could look back and say Bermudez was able to finish him recently, but at the same time, I mean, he rocked him first, and that's pretty much, I think, what helped him get that sub there as well. So Tavares can win this fight by sub, but outside of that, I do think it's going to be Guida setting the pace, setting the tempo of this fight, getting the takedowns, and just scoring points along the way. And then even though Guida's really, again, I think not really known for his striking game, and I think Tavares does have the skill set, like I said, better technically sound even on the feet, Guida has a little bit more power, I think, on the feet as well. And with that chin of Tavares, I wouldn't be shocked if Guida did just catch him, you know, threw a bomb and caught him on the feet as well and put him out. So I don't think that's the way it's going to play out. I think Guida does what he does best and kind of grinds out a decision win here over Tavares. But that being said, nothing would surprise me in this fight either way. It should be competitive. It should be a good fight against or between two veterans that have a lot of respect. And we'll see some two-way action continue to pour into this fight. So it's not going to be probably a big decision for the sports books. It's just going to be a good fight to watch and see how it plays out. But I am going to lean towards Guida.
Yeah, both of these guys have been around the UFC for a really long time. And both have shown some flaws recently. Now, Guida has attacked those flaws a little bit. He moved his camp up to Dwayne Ludwig's gym in Colorado. So we'll see if he's able to kind of bring back that Clay Guida of old that was that Energizer Bunny that pushed that super high pace and was able to just wear his opponents down. Tavares, on the other hand, I don't think he's made any radical adjustments since the loss to Brian Ortega. And that was a close competitive fight, and Ortega was just able to pick up the TKO late in the third round. And I think that's the type of thing that Clay Guida could do. Well, maybe not get the TKO, but if Tavares starts to slow down a little bit, if this fight is at a really high tempo, it favors Clay Guida. I mean, this guy does not get tired. He's able to go and go and go, and I think he's gone away from that style a little bit lately to focus on more technical side of things. And I think he needs to go back to it because that's a part of his game that made him a very dangerous lightweight and a dangerous featherweight. So we'll see what happens here. But yes, Tavares does have some technical advantages. I mean, Tavares is a better overall in the submission department. And I think Tavares is a little bit better in terms of technical striking ability. But Guida is more durable. Guida has the better gas tank. And I think with moving to Colorado, we might see a little bit of that old-school Clay Guida style. So while Thiago Tavares is a dangerous featherweight, I think Clay Guida is going to be a bit too much for him to handle this fight. And I see Clay Guida just going and going and pushing a high tempo, and I'm not sure Thiago Tavares is going to be able to keep up. I see Clay Guida winning a decision or potentially finishing this one late. So Clay Guida is my pick. Now moving up to the lightweight division, we have Jan Cabral, who is 12-1, taking on Johnny Case, who is 21-4. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I open Case -150 to come back on Cabral +110. Since that time, we have seen some decent movement. It's Case now -245. The comeback on Cabral is +205. So pretty much everyone coming in on Case, I mean, they are getting some decent action that way. I understand it. I mean, Case is definitely a talented fighter. At age 26, he keeps on improving, training with a good camp. Miles Jury and crew over in Alliance. Now he's moved over to Power MMA with Jury. So the guy has a solid training camp behind him, and he has a lot of skill. I mean, just natural, I think, ability on, all over the place. On the ground, his wrestling keeps on improving, which I think in the past definitely needed some work. I mean, his ability to get off his back, has gotten better and get top position and then control the fight on the ground and drop some serious ground and pound when he's on top has been pretty nice to see. And then on the feet, he can mix things up well with his knees, with his kicks, with his elbows, with his striking overall. So he could be a very dangerous fighter in every aspect of the game. And he's looked great in the UFC thus far. So I understand the hype and why people are coming in on a case like this, because Cabral, honestly, I mean, his performance against Zach Cummings, I think, scared a lot of people off. Cabral, very talented fighter. We know that he's a BJJ whiz, really. I mean, he's amazing on the ground. There's no doubt about that. He's more than capable of submitting most fighters. But the problem is, again, Cummings did exploit him a little bit because he wasn't able to finish Cummings on the ground early on, even though he had his opportunities and his moments there. He looked really good in that fight, and he had Cummings in trouble. But as the fight went on, he started getting tired, and Cummings was able to basically weather the storm and then started picking Cabral apart, started controlling, you know, the takedown game as well, and wasn't able to – obviously Cabral wasn't able to finish the fight, so he lost a decision, a fair decision to Cummings. So I think that dropped his stock quite a bit, and people are just basically throwing him out the window here. But he has dropped – that fight was at 170. He has dropped down to 155. Against Cotani, I mean, he looked really good. He did what he was supposed to do. He got the submission win in round two there, and Cotani has a very capable ground game as well. So even though he's been subbed in the past, he's not an easy guy to sub. Cabral is one of these guys. I mean, if you look back, I mean, throughout his career, he actually in Dream submitted Sakuraba, which is another accomplished, I mean, something you could brag about. It's a notch on your belt for sure, because Sakuraba, another guy that's, even though he's a been around the sport for so long and he's kind of on the decline or whatnot, still was impressive for Cabral to actually go out there and sub him. So he has that much of a special ground game. Once he gets the fight to the ground, you could be in some serious trouble. And if you look back through Case's career thus far, especially in the UFC, and even before he came to the UFC, he's been put on his back. On every fight, he's been put on his back. He's been controlled a little bit, but he has managed to get out and then do some good things as well. Against Cabral, I'm not sure if he's going to get the opportunity. I think Cabral on the ground, again, everybody's kind of underestimating him here. I think he will get the takedown against Case. He will earn a decent position, and I think he probably will look for that sub. And Case's sub defense overall is decent, but I'm not sure if it's good enough. I think Cummings' submission defense is a little bit better than Case's, and I think Cabral probably finds his opening on the ground and subs him. If he doesn't, Case will probably come back and win this fight, maybe even by stoppage in round two or round three if Cabral does slow down like he has in the past. But I'm not sure. I think Cabral will be able to get this fight to the floor and utilize what he does best, and that's his jiu-jitsu. So I'm going to actually lean with the upset pick here and go with Cabral, because I just think everybody's just kind of underestimating Cabral in this spot against Case, and I do not like the fact that Case has been taken down and controlled by everybody he's fought thus far in the UFC, and like I said, even before that. So the ground game is improving for Case. I just don't think it's going to live up to what Cabral is going to kind of throw at him here. So I am going to pick Cabral to win this fight.
This fight is entirely going to hinge on who can implement their style. Jan Cabral is a fantastic Brazilian jiu-jitsu artist. Johnny Case is an excellent striker. Now, both guys do have a little bit of skill in each other's strengths, but primarily, that's how this fight is going to play out. If Jan Cabral can get this fight to the ground and keep it there, Johnny Case is going to be in trouble. Case has been taken down in all of his UFC fights so far, although he has showcased good takedown defense and an ability to get back to his feet. I don't know, it could be really scary if it's Jan Cabral on top of him, because he has not faced anybody of that caliber in terms of ability on the canvas. And Jan Cabral, he's not much of a striker. If Johnny Case is able to get anything going on the feet, then Cabral could either get finished or easily lose a decision. So 100%, this fight is entirely going to rely on who can kind of force their style on their opponent. Now, the other thing that does play a factor here is Jan Cabral's conditioning. We didn't really get to see much of it in his debut at lightweight because he was able to pick up a quick submission victory, and if he's able to do that here, then that's great. But if he can't, then who knows? Because yeah, he used up a lot of energy in that Cummings fight, and he was not able to get a submission, and then he completely gassed and couldn't do anything either on the ground or on the feet against Cummings. And if that happens against Case, he could be in trouble. The difference, though, is of course Cabral was trying to drag down a guy, one of the biggest welterweights on the entire roster, and he was able to do it, just not for very long. And this time around, he's going to be facing a lightweight. So I do think that it won't take as much energy for Cabral to get this fight to the ground, so maybe he won't gas as badly if he can't put Case away, but that is something you seriously have to put into consideration. Now, Case, on the other hand, he is a very talented striker. He's showcased that he's clearly a good prospect in the UFC lightweight division, but again, he hasn't really faced anybody yet. So, I mean, his last fight, he had Francisco Trevino, and he went to decision against him. Yeah, it was one-sided, but that's Francisco Trevino. Sage Northcutt showed up and put Trevino away in 30 seconds. So, I think Case still has a lot to prove right now, and he probably needs to pick up a finish if he really wants to move up in the division. So, I think there's going to be a lot of pressure on Case to go out there and perform, and Cabral could surprise people because I think people are underestimating him. That being said, I am going to lean with Johnny Case. I think the fact that his conditioning is better and that his takedown defense is improving should be the biggest factors. If Cabral does not put this fight away quickly, I see him getting himself in a bit of a trouble. So I'm going to side with the safe pick and go Johnny Case. But again, Cabral is going to be dangerous, especially early in this fight. Now sticking with the lightweight division, we have Gleison Tibau, who is 40-11, taking on Abel Trujillo, who is 12-6 with one no contest. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Open Tibau -130 to come back on Trujillo -110. And right now, line margins basically tighten up a little bit. Tibau -125, Trujillo is +105. Early action was all over Tibau. Then we started getting some action back on Trujillo. That's why the line dropped back down to where it originally opened, basically. So two-way action on this fight, but still a little bit more trickling on Tibau overall from what I'm hearing. I understand it. I mean, Tibau is definitely the more accomplished fighter. You know what you're getting from him. I mean, he's beat some of the best. He's been around for a long time, and the guy has, again, a complete game. He's more known for his ground fighting, his wrestling, his jiu-jitsu, but his stand-up game is constantly improving, and he's the type of guy that typically outpoints, obviously, most lightweights, I mean, throughout his career, at least, if he doesn't finish you on the ground. Or now, again, he's developing that knockout power a little bit as well, so you can't sleep on him anywhere. Tibau, very solid, but he is getting older, and in fight years, I mean, he's above and beyond age 32. So it's starting to see a little bit of decline, I think, in Tibau in some ways. And that chin is definitely a major area of concern for me, to be honest with you. And that's why the line's even this close. I mean, skill set for skill set, there's no doubt about it. Tibau is the better fighter. But what Trujillo brings to the table in this spot here could be bad for Tibau. I mean, let's face it. Trujillo is a beast on the feet. He has decent wrestling. He makes mistakes on the ground. He's a little bit too aggressive. He's one of those guys that does let his aggression lead to mistakes at times. So that's why he's not as dependable as you'd like to see. But he does train with a great camp in the Black Zillions, and he is improving his overall game. In fact, if you look at the run he really was going on up until that Ferguson fight where he just recently got beat by submission, actually, to Ferguson back in 2014. So it's actually been a year, I should state that right now, for Trujillo since he's fought. So that is a little bit of a concern as well. But overall, what I was getting at before that was Trujillo. I mean, he went on a very impressive run. I mean, some wild fights, some firefights, some craziness going on with the Varner fight, the Bowling fight, etc. But he has looked like he's improving. And the guy is the type of fighter that he goes out there and he goes to knock you out. I mean, there's no doubt about it. I mean, he goes for the kill. And I think with Tibau, that chin being a little bit suspect, if he doesn't go for that takedown right away and get the fight to the floor and even try to work his submission game against a guy like Trujillo, the more it stays up, the better the chance that Trujillo lands that big bomb and puts Tibau out. I mean, decent chin. Maybe I'm not respecting Tibau or not. I mean, what we've seen, I think the chin is on a decline. He has been knocked out. And with the power that Trujillo throws, there's no doubt about it. If he connects, Tibau is probably going to sleep. So with all that being said, Tibau is the better fighter. I'm still going to lean towards Trujillo because I do think he's probably going to be able to keep it upright. And then his aggression is probably going to get the knockout win for him. So I'm going to go with another underdog here. I think Trujillo is just stylistically a bad matchup at this time against Tibau. I mean, if this was maybe a couple years back, Tibau was a little bit more in his prime, I wouldn't probably go there. But as of right now, I think Trujillo is the guy that's actually improving, and Tibau might be on a slight decline. And I just like the way this fight matches up for Trujillo.
Honestly, it could go either way. The way you have to look at it, though, is Gleison Tibau is getting up there in years. He's been getting clipped a few times in recent fights. And Abel Trujillo is a very, very dangerous striker. I mean, the guy is a bit reckless and wild and crazy. So maybe Tibau can use that wrestling and take him out of his element. But if he doesn't, if this fight stays standing for any extended periods of time, even for brief periods of time, I see Trujillo clipping Tebow and putting him away. Honestly, Gleison Tebow needs to focus 100% on his wrestling in this fight. He needs to get Trujillo on his back where he's not going to be getting punched in the face, because Trujillo has a ton of power. I mean, the guy put Jamie Varner out cold in their fight, and that was an absolute war, one of the craziest fights of all time. And Gleison Tebow, I mean, he's a guy that doesn't have a lot of finishing ability. He's a grinder. He's a great wrestler, but his chin is starting to slow down. He's not quite as explosive as he used to be. And if he cannot put Trujillo on his back, then I can see Trujillo, you know, cracking him. And the other big thing you have to take into consideration, just like the Cabral Case fight, is the fact that Trujillo does not have a lot of great conditioning. I mean, the guy is a balls-to-the-wall type of fighter. He goes for it, and if he doesn't get it, he runs out of steam. I mean, you saw it. He was exhausted in the Jamie Varner fight and still managed to pick up an early second-round knockout. But in his next fight, Tony Ferguson, I mean, he had Tony Ferguson on the ropes early, couldn't put him away, and then just completely ran out of steam and gave up a submission. I mean, it was the second he couldn't finish Tony Ferguson, he was done. So he is an all-or-nothing type of fighter, and if he doesn't get it all, he gets literally nothing. So basically, if you're banking on Abel Trujillo here, you're basically saying he needs to get that quick finish, and if he doesn't, I mean, he's going to lose. So Tebow is that type of guy that is capable of weathering the storm. I mean, his conditioning is usually on point. His striking isn't bad. And he is one of the biggest, strongest guys in the lightweight division. So if Tebow is able to get this fight into the clinch, make it ugly, just really slow down the pace, then I think Trujillo is going to be in a lot of trouble. If Tebow is able to avoid getting put away, Trujillo is going to be in a lot of trouble. But that being said, you know, Tebow did get blasted in his last fight. You know, about a year and a half ago, he got blasted by Michael Johnson. So I do think that against these young, explosive, dangerous type of strikers like Abel Trujillo, maybe Tebow could get himself in some trouble and get put away. So I'm going to also go with Trujillo here, although it's a bit scary because there's so many factors going against him as well. But I think Trujillo does connect, and I think he puts him out. So my pick is Abel Trujillo. Now moving on to the Fox Sports 1 main card, we have Fabio Maldonado, who is 22-7, taking on Corey Anderson, who is 7-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA odds maker's perspective on this one?
I open Anderson minus 385, the comeback on Maldonado plus 265. And right now, looking over at Five Dimes, Anderson is minus 500, the comeback on Maldonado plus 400. So more action coming in, parlay action as well on Anderson here in this spot. This is a spot, I mean, I don't argue with at all as far as the way people are coming in early on. I think a lot of people might have been surprised that Anderson actually opened that high, but especially considering, you know, he had that setback to Vellante not long ago, but he did bounce back relatively well. I mean, you got to admit that definitely in his last fight against Blackwich. I mean, Anderson did exactly what he had to do, control Blackwich, and just looked great doing so. So I think he's going to have to follow that same game plan here against a guy like Maldonado. I think Maldonado is a very talented fighter. He's the type of guy that obviously weathers an early storm a lot and is basically able to just outlast people, and then his striking kind of tends to shine as people get tired. That's how he's been winning fights recently. I just don't think it's going to happen here for him here and against a guy like Anderson. The thing with Maldonado is he has been placed on his back way too often against decent wrestlers, and Anderson fits that category as well. I mean, if you look at it, Stringer, everybody along the line, Vellante went out there and just dominated him on the ground in round one, and then again, he kind of faded, and that's why Maldonado won. The same thing you can say about Stringer in that fight as well. He faded, Maldonado won. Anderson is not going to fade, even though he does tend to slow down as the fight goes. He's not going to be one of those guys that fades that early and is easy to kind of, you know, start sprawling and brawling on. No doubt about that. I think Anderson is going to be able to even hang with him a little bit on the feet. Anderson's boxing is decent. He has a little bit of power to go along with it, but If it does stay up, you got to give the slight edge to Maldonado on the feet, no doubt about that. On the ground is where it's going to be, and Anderson is going to be on top. I wouldn't even be surprised if Anderson finishes this fight, to be honest with you, because I think he can maintain and get mount at one point and then just start dropping bombs, or even Maldonado maybe turn his back and, you know, he sub him there as well. So I know that's a lot to be said because Anderson really officially in his career hasn't won by sub, but I think Maldonado, I mean, he will get superior position and he will probably end the fight on the ground. If he doesn't though, I think he will get it to the floor all three rounds and he's going to have enough, even though he's taking this fight on short notice, he's going to have enough juice in the tank to keep it up. So I think even if it gets a little bit tougher in round three, he's still going to get Maldonado on his back and he's going to win this fight. So I do see a clear decision for Anderson, if not a possible stoppage due to position on the ground. So Anderson's the way to go here. I know a lot of people are putting him in parlays, and honestly, I think you're going to be pretty safe here.
The only thing that's even slightly scary about this fight is the fact that Corey Anderson is taking it on shorter notice. I mean, he did take it with about 2.5 weeks before the fight, but that being said, this is a great matchup for him. Maldonado is smaller. I mean, he's giving up some height. Maldonado's giving up some reach. He's giving up leg reach. He's older. The only thing Maldonado has going for him in this fight is the fact that he's tough and he's a decent boxer. And as long as Corey Anderson doesn't just stand right in front of Maldonado and gas and allow Maldonado to pick up the pace and start connecting with some body shots and some boxing, then I don't see how Anderson loses this fight. Anderson is quicker, he's stronger, he's the better wrestler, and he should be able to take Maldonado down and keep him down. I mean, his last fight, Anderson stepped up his game and absolutely dominated his opponent. I mean, it was very, very impressive. As an underdog, he went out there and it was a one-sided shellacking almost exclusively because he was able to get takedowns and then stay in top position. And he wasn't just content to lay and pray. I mean, he was connecting with punches, heavy ground and pound. And despite that, he was able to keep up that pace for a full three rounds. So I'm not too worried about Anderson gassing. That's been the biggest issue for Maldonado getting comebacks in fights like against Gian Vellante, where Vellante dominated Maldonado in the first round and was winning the first half of the second round and then just ran out of steam and Maldonado picked him apart and ended up getting a TKO. I don't see that happening this time around. I see Anderson getting Maldonado on his back and then just punishing him. I think Anderson really is an excellent fighter. He has continued to develop. And I think the one thing that you do have to worry about is maybe his chin isn't so great. So if Maldonado does connect with something heavy early, maybe Anderson could get affected. But I think Anderson's smarter than that. I expect Anderson to just push a high pace and then either get that late finish or just win a very one-sided decision due to that wrestling. So I expect Anderson to win convincingly. So he's my pick. Now dropping down to the lightweight division, we have Gilbert Burns, who is 10-0, taking on Rashid Magomedov, who is 18-1. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Magomedov minus 135, Burns minus 105 was my opener right now. It's actually Magomedov minus 160. The comeback on Burns is plus 140. Typically, I would say, man, if you could grab Burns at plus money, you got to be all over it. But this is a tough fight. So the line going a little bit more towards Magomedov, I agree with that as well, because I do think that he has a slight edge in his fight. And it's mainly because he is the better striker. I mean, Magomedov is definitely a very impressive striker to watch. I mean, very impressive mixed martial artist in general because his takedown defense is very good as well. His submission defense is actually pretty well. Now, if Burns, against a guy like Burns, which he excels at that jiu-jitsu game, I mean, he's top-notch, world-class. There's no doubt about it. He's one of the best Brazilian jiu-jitsu practitioners in the sport right now. So that's how good he is. And if he gets Magomedov down on the ground, just because others haven't been able to submit him doesn't mean Burns can't. So he doesn't want to play that game, but that being said, I mean, Magomedov is a very complete mixed martial artist, and he excels at striking, which he's going to have the edge. I think he's probably going to be able to keep Burns from taking him down and getting positional control on him as well and looking for that sub. If he does that, he should be able to pick Burns apart on the feet a little bit. He should be able to do some damage along the way. Burns is pretty tough. I mean, he has got no quit in him. Obviously, he's shown that in the past as well. The guy comes to fight, he comes to win, and you're never safe with him. I mean, we've seen that against the Oliveira fight with Burns, which did expose him a little bit because Oliveira was able to handle Burns on the feet. Burns had trouble taking him to the ground, but even late in that fight, Burns was finally able to get it to the ground, and he ended up subbing him, you know, winning the fight by submission. So he has that kind of skill and that kind of capability. So Magomedov has to be cautious at all times in this fight. But I do think we're going to kind of see almost a repeat performance of the Oliveira fight. But Magomedov is a little bit sharper, a little bit more technically sound. And I think even on the ground, his ground awareness is a little bit better as well. So I do like the way these guys match up. And I do think that Magomedov is probably going to be able to sprawl and brawl and pick Burns apart along the way and earn a very competitive and very tough, tiring type of decision. So it's jiu-jitsu, another one of these battles where you see your typical grappler versus striker. This time I'm going to actually go with the striker because I do think his takedown defense and his wrestling is good enough to keep it upright against a guy like Burns. Awesome fight. You know, honestly, it's one of those situations for me too where it's a shame that one of these guys has to, you know, get a loss in the UFC because I think both of them are capable of making a run at 155, but I do think it's going to be Magomedov getting the nod here in this fight.
Gilbert Burns, just a year ago, was one of the top prospects in the entire UFC lightweight division, but then he faced Alex Oliveira, and while he did walk away with a third-round submission victory, I think he got exposed a little bit. He is a decent striker, but he does not push a high enough pace, and he's not quick or explosive enough on the feet to really get things going against high-level guys. And I definitely see him getting himself in trouble here against Magomedov. Magomedov has gotten better and better every time we've seen him compete inside the octagon. I mean, his last fight, he looked incredible in picking up that late TKO. Now, Gilbert Burns, on the other hand, I think, you know, he's definitely starting to slow down a little bit. So maybe people are stopped fanning the flames of his hype train. Now, in terms of pure skills, Burns is a decent overall striker, but his biggest strength, hands down, is his ground game. And he is world-class on the canvas. And if he can get Magomedov down, he might be able to get something going here. Magomedov is good on the ground, but it's going to be difficult for him to fend off a lot of the submission attacks that Burns is able to enforce. The problem is Magomedov is a spectacular striker, and I can see him countering Gilbert Burns and just keeping his distance. He's the type of guy that is able to utilize distance as you get up further and further on the scale of high-level strikers. I can see Magomedov is right up there. He's one of those guys that's able to utilize great footwork, great distance, and keep people off of him, especially recently. I mean, the Silverio performance was top-notch, and I can see Magomedov making things happen here. He is an excellent striker. He has developing power, too, and I think he's just got a little bit more momentum right now than Gilbert Burns. So unless Gilbert Burns is able to get this fight to the ground in a hurry, then Magomedov is probably going to be having his way with him on the feet. This fight could go either way if Burns is able to get it to the ground, but if he doesn't, I see Magomedov, you know, putting on a one-sided performance. So I'm going to side with Rashid Magomedov. I just think he's got a little bit more potential right now in the lightweight division. Now, sticking with the lightweight division, we have Alex Oliveira, who is 12-2-1 with one no contest, taking on Piotr Hallman, who is 15-4. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I open Oliveira -315, the comeback on Hallman +235. Right now, there has been some action on the dog coming in at +170 for Hallman at the time of the recording, and Oliveira is now the favorite at -200. So line margins tighten up a little bit as well, but there has been more action on Hallman. You know, Hallman's one of these guys that you definitely got to give him respect. I mean, he comes to fight every time. He's a very solid fighter. And the good thing about Hallman is his, again, well-rounded skill set overall. I mean, he's a very complete fighter. He has striking, capable striking. He's got some power on the feet to go along with it. Nothing that's going to really blow people away or make you just your jaw drop watching him strike, but he's smart and, you know, and he could definitely do some damage. Now, his submission game is very underrated as well. He's got decent wrestling, decent takedown defense overall. So he could beat you in all aspects of the game. But the problem is, again, he doesn't really excel. I mean, he doesn't dominate you in any particular area. He's just a very solid fighter. And that's why I think people are coming in here against Oliveira, especially since in his last fight, I mean, Oliveira was able to get the job done and got the win. But I think a lot of people were surprised of how hittable and how Oliveira's defense looked worse in, you know, in his spot there. So I do believe that Oliveira is better than what we've seen against Merritt. I think he's going to be able to perform, even though Holman is a very tough out, no doubt about it. He's not going to be a guy to just physically dominate either way in any aspect of the game. I still think Oliveira is probably going to perform a little bit better here because his striking is really fun to watch. He's going to have a 5-inch reach advantage over Holman. Offensively, I mean, he could throw with the best of them, no doubt about that. He's got power to go behind it. He's got that killer instinct too. A lot of good things about Oliveira's game. And what's more impressive right now is, I mean, you go back a fight to the KJ Nunes fight. He knew KJ Nunes was having some success on the feet there as well. And he knew that he had to get the fight to the ground because it wasn't looking too good for him. And he did. He got the fight to the ground and he was able to win that fight by submission. So I was pleased to see that. Because I think Oliveira is just going to continue to get better and better. I mean, even though he looks a little bit older, he's only 27 years old. So I think there's a big upside to Oliveira's game overall. And I think it's a bigger upside than what we're going to see in Holman. So Oliveira has a reach advantage. I think when it comes to the wrestling, it's actually going to be pretty close because I trust Oliveira's takedown defense actually a little bit better than Holman's. And I think offensively, I wouldn't be surprised if we see Oliveira actually stick Holman on his back a time or two along the way as well. It's going to be hard for either fighter, I think, here to actually finish each other. But if there is a finish, I could see Oliveira probably maybe landing enough punishment along the way to do damage and get Holman out there. Or we could see another crazy cut stoppage or something like that. But more than likely, we're going to see another close competitive battle with Oliveira probably winning this fight. And I hope he does look a little bit better. I mean, it's unfortunate because, again, in that Burns fight, he opened a lot of eyes. And I think a lot of people were really impressed and thinking, man, this guy is really going somewhere. And then he had – even though he won the fights, his performances haven't been what – we expected, I guess you could say. And I think that's why it's caused his stock to drop a little bit. But if he gets an impressive win against a guy like Holman, I think he's going to be on the rise again and it will be a solid win. So I do think he is going to get the job done probably by decision. And I think he is the more capable finisher in this spot as well. So I got to go with Oliveira.
This fight, I just don't see being super competitive. I mean, Alex Oliveira has really turned it around in his last two performances since that, you know, crushing loss that he was winning against Gilbert Burns. He was able to pick up an impressive, improbable submission over KJ Nunes in the first round. And then his last fight, he was able to, you know, have a pretty one-sided decision over Joe Merritt. So both of those fights, surprisingly, he was able to utilize a superior ground game. So even though he is an excellent overall striker, I think Oliveira also does a great job of mixing up and utilizing a good ground game as well. He has good takedowns, and he has good guard passes, and he goes for submissions. So I think this guy is a solid overall, well-rounded fighter. He's got several big advantages in this fight against Holman. He's taller. He's got a 5-inch reach advantage. His legs are longer. I really think Holman's going to be in a bit of trouble here, especially because Holman's been a bit inactive as of late. He lost his last two fights, including picking up a drug suspension after the loss to Gleison Tibau. So I think, you know, all eyes are on Holman. He's not able to get on the juice or anything. And he's probably, I think, was helped a little bit if he was using it before the Tibau fight. Now, in terms of overall pure MMA skill, I think Alex Oliveira is slightly better than Holman in just about all areas. Holman's dangerous, he's capable, but I just think Alex Oliveira is the better fighter at this point in their careers, and Holman just didn't look quite as good in that last fight, losing by a round two doctor stoppage. He kind of ran out of steam a little bit. And I just see Alex Oliveira either outworking Holman on the feet, using that reach advantage, or I can see Oliveira taking this fight to the ground and actually being the superior ground fighter. I really don't see a lot of areas where Holman is going to be able to get much going in this fight. So especially being in Brazil, I think Oliveira is going to be crazy motivated, and I think he's going to go out there and take care of business. So my pick is Alex Oliveira. Now dropping down to the bantamweight division, we have Thomas Almeida, who is 20-0, taking on Anthony Burchak, who is 12-2. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I open Almeida minus 475. The comeback on Berchek plus 325. And right now, looking over five dimes, it's minus 440 plus 350. So line margins tighten up a little bit. And we are seeing some two-way action. Of course, people are throwing Almeida in parlays. And people are actually coming in straight on Berchek as well at the high price. He does deserve – Berchek deserves more respect than this for sure. But at the same time, I knew I had to go high with this line. I mean, Almeida is one of those guys that – everybody's talking about right now at 135. A lot of people are expecting him to eventually, you know, earn his way up to a title shot. And man, I mean, with the offensive arsenal this guy throws at you on the feet, it's a thing of beauty, no doubt about it. He's got speed, he's got power, he mixes things up well, he's got accuracy, he's got length. I mean, everything really you want to see in a fighter on the feet, minus that defense, man. I mean, he does have a problem with that as well. Again, that's kind of a trend on this card. He's hittable. I mean, you've seen that even in his last fight against Pickett. Pickett had him in all sorts of trouble for a minute as well. Pickett does have some power. But that being said, you look back and he's been clipped. I mean, even Gorman had some success that he did some serious damage there, to him along the way. So Almeida is one of these guys that is tough as nails. He's young. He's only 24 years old. So he can absorb some of that punishment, and the guy has no quit in him. So even if he does get decked or, you know, hits the floor, he does bounce back up and he's okay. And then he just puts it on you even more. So you don't want to kind of anger the guy because he'll come at you and he'll put your lights out. So he is the favorite for a reason in this fight against a guy like Berchek, because he has decent enough takedown defense. Berchek is going to have to look to take this fight to the floor, even though Berchek is coming off a very impressive knockout win over Soto. And we all know that Soto recently fought against a champ, TJ Dillashaw, and Dillashaw, it took him some time, you know, before he got rid of Soto. Soto was actually hanging in there and being a lot more competitive than most people thought. So very impressive performance for Berchek getting Soto out of there. He proved that he does have knockout power, but I think Berchek is a very complete fighter. He excels more on the ground, though. He's the type of guy that likes to wrestle, likes to scramble on the ground, get top position, utilize the submission game as well. So that's what he does best, and that's what he's going to try to do against Almeida here. Although he's going to have to stand and bang for a little while, and again, he might have a little bit of success landing some punches on Almeida, but the problem is, if you get in a firefight with a guy like Almeida, you're going to lose. I mean, that's the reality of it more times than not. So I think that's not going to be a good sign for Berchek, and I think stylistically, it is kind of a tough matchup because Berchek is not going to be able to control this fight on the ground. So if he's not, he's probably going to get clipped. If he doesn't get knocked out in this fight, he's still going to get outpointed, I think, by Almeida along the way. So he's a decent favorite, maybe a little bit too high. It is tempting. It is a dog or pass at this point where my opener was, and at the current line, I wouldn't recommend going out there and going crazy on Almeida. Berchek probably has some value as an underdog possibly. But that being said, how realistic is it to go against a guy that has so much momentum, so much potential, and so much going for him right now? It's kind of hard to do that as well. So my official pick will be Almeida. Not a big surprise to many people. I mean, the kid is a stud, and I expect him to continue his run towards 135. I just hope he has better defense this time around.
This is a terrific matchup, and it's definitely been made to showcase Thomas Almeida. I mean, Almeida picked up one of the best knockouts of 2015 in his last fight against Brad Pickett. But before that knockout, he was in big trouble against Pickett. I mean, the biggest problem with Almeida is, despite how incredibly talented he is in terms of striking ability, diversity in his attack, and power, I mean, he is definitely exposed a bit in terms of striking defense and chin. So Berchek, who picked up a TKO victory over Joe Soto in the first round in his last fight, if he connects with something heavy with Almeida, he could put him out. I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibility. That is Almeida's biggest flaw. And Berchek is dangerous. He's got power. Berchek actually is a little bit longer in terms of leg reach. Maybe he could connect with the head kick or something. They're about even in reach. Berchek's about an inch taller. So, you know, this is an even matchup. The biggest difference, though, is Almeida is much more explosive and capable of violence, but Berchek has a good chin. So Almeida is going to have to land a lot of shots on Berchek without getting hit back. And that is really scary because of Almeida's durability issues and striking defense. So we'll see what happens here, but I don't expect to see much of this fight taking place on the ground unless somebody gets knocked down. I think it's going to be a firefight, probably the most entertaining fight of the night, just because that's kind of the way that Thomas Almeida fights. But man, you really got to be careful because Anthony Berchek is dangerous. I mean, Berchek lost his UFC debut, but I mean, he just played with fire against a guy that was a leg lock specialist and he got leg locked. And that's not going to be the case this time around. I mean, this is going to be a firefight, and somebody's probably getting knocked out, and we'll see. I mean, it's going to be tough for Berchek to get put away because he is so durable, but I think Almeida has the ability to do it, and I see Almeida picking up a knockout victory at some point in this fight, but again, you have to be extremely cautious because of those durability issues, because if Berchek connects with something real clean, you could see a huge upset here. But my pick is going to be Thomas Almeida. Now moving all the way up to the light heavyweight division, we have Glover Teixeira, who is 23-4, taking on Patrick Cummins, who is 8-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA odds maker's perspective on this one?
Teixeira -315, the comeback on Cummins +235. That was my opening line. Right now it is Teixeira -440, the comeback on Cummins is +350. So even though I opened it somewhat decent, I mean, they still bet it up. And another spot that I really can't argue with too much. I mean, I was glad to see Teixeira rebound and pull off a heck of a win over OSP. A lot of people were kind of questioning him. I mean, myself included, no doubt about it. I mean, you get to the point in your career where you've accomplished so much to sure climb that ladder. I mean, not just in the UFC. The guy's been around the sport of jiu-jitsu. I mean, he's been involved in mixed martial arts for a long, long time. So he's a true veteran of the sport. But he's also obviously climbed his way up to the championship level in the UFC as well, getting that title shot against a guy like John Jones. So after that, though, he did lose and have a setback to Phil Davis, and I think a lot of people were expecting maybe the start of a decline, including, like I said, myself as well. It's hard to kind of trust where these guys are at, especially when you're 35, 36 years old at some time, and you're fighting a guy like OSP that's been looking great, stuffing takedowns, and look what he did at Cummings. So it was impressive to see him rebound and kind of prove people wrong, show up back in shape, and basically do what he did to OSP was very impressive. So glad to see it. And I guess Cummins is definitely a guy you have to be concerned with somewhat, because he's got a lot of power on the feet as well, because he's just that strong wrestler. And that's what he tries to utilize the best. But technically speaking, I mean, his stand up game is not really a big threat to Teixeira. Teixeira has a big advantage on the feet. Cummins is going to have to look to take this fight to the floor and try to control Teixeira, almost similar to what Phil Davis did, and kind of grind out a close decision win. Teixeira on the ground, though, I mean, his jiu-jitsu is on a different level. I don't think he's going to be able to be controlled with a guy like Cummins. I mean, Phil Davis, if you have to put jiu-jitsu to jiu-jitsu, no, I'm not going to disrespect Cummins at all, because I've been impressed with some of his submission D thus far throughout his career as well. But I still think Phil Davis on the ground overall is just a better grappler than Cummins is. So I think he would bode better against a guy like Teixeira than Cummins will. So I think Cummins is going to have to be careful, because Teixeira on the ground is no joke at all, especially if he gets top position, which he might in this fight. Cummins is going to be some serious trouble. So I think what we're going to see here is basically your sprawl brawl from Teixeira. And on the feet, he does have the better striking. He's got the more effective power on the feet as well. And he's probably going to put Cummins' lights out, because he has been knocked out in the past. That chin is suspect. His strike defense is probably one of his bigger weaknesses, no doubt about that as well. I mean, a lot of things to like about a guy like Cummins, but unfortunately for him, he's just biting off more than he could chew with a guy like Glover. So he's going to have to pull something crazy out to win this fight against Teixeira, in my opinion, and I just don't see that happening. So Teixeira is just the better overall fighter. He's got advantages in almost every area across the board, and I think he is going to get the job done here against Cummins as well.
I just think this is a bad matchup for Patrick Cummins. Yes, Glover Teixeira was taken down and beat over three rounds by Phil Davis, but Patrick Cummins isn't Phil Davis, and I don't think Glover Teixeira is going to be that same Glover Teixeira. If you go back and look, I mean, Glover didn't go to ATT for that camp. He showed up, he was out of shape, he didn't look good physically at all, and then he got completely dominated. This time around, most recently, Glover looked amazing against Ovince St. Preux, a guy that knocked Patrick Cummins out easily, and Glover dominated him over the course of three rounds and then ended up picking up a submission in the third. I expect that same Glover Teixeira to show up, and if he does, Patrick Cummins stands no chance. Cummins just cannot hang with Glover on the feet. He is not a very powerful striker. He's not the most dangerous in terms of technique. Really, what Cummins has the biggest strength is those powerful takedowns. And then when he gets in top position, if he can get some space, if he can posture up, he can dish out some serious pain. I mean, he's got some good elbows on the ground. He's got good ground and pound. But I don't see Glover giving that up at all. He's just too solid overall, and Glover actually has a good ground game in his own right, not just with submissions, but good wrestling. So I wouldn't even be shocked to see Glover take Patrick Cummins down, but again, I don't think he wants to play around too much in that world because he's got such a huge advantage in terms of the open space on the feet. Glover is an excellent boxer, and he has some heavy, heavy hands, both left and right hooks and straight punches. And even though, you know, Cummins, the reach advantage is the exact same, or the reaches are the exact same, I don't see Cummins getting anything going on the feet here. Really, it's all or nothing for Cummins to get this fight to the canvas. And I think the other big issue is Cummins wears damage really bad. I mean, if Glover lands anything solid, Cummins is going to get busted up. He's going to be bruising, swelling, bleeding all over the place. And eventually I see Glover either putting Cummins away or via strikes or submission. I can definitely see Glover picking up a submission if Cummins gives up his back or something after getting hurt on the feet or on the ground even. So I just see this fight being way too much. Patrick Cummins bit off way more than he could chew here, and I see Glover winning convincingly. So my pick is Glover Teixeira. Now moving on to the main event of the evening, we have Vitor Belfort, who is 24-11, taking on Dan Henderson, who is 31-13. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Belfort, minus 290. Comeback on Henderson, plus 210. That was my opener. Right now, over at Five Dimes, it's minus 360 for Vitor, and the comeback on Hendo is plus 300. So a little bit more support coming in for Belfort. Parlay action included. Not really that surprised, especially if you look back at 2013. Wasn't that long ago, and Belfort just walked right through him, just destroyed Henderson. I mean, it was a brutal KO win for him. It was impressive with that head kick. You know, everything that you want to see in a finish, I mean, he got there. Unfortunately, it was on Hendo, and you got to have respect. Both these guys throughout their careers have been legends, Hall of Famers, no doubt about it, and accomplished so much. But the problem is here, can you trust Henderson at age 45? That decline spot has obviously hit him a little bit, even though he's capable of ending fights with that H-bomb at any moment. He's still on a bit of a skid, even though he did rebound and knock Bosch out, which was great to see. Belfort has been impressive as well. I mean, he's made it to the upper tier guys as well. I mean, he fought John Jones recently, and he almost pulled something off his back there against Jones as well. But before that, before his loss to Weidman recently, he went on a nice little streak there as well with quality competition, including the Henderson fight. That was in 2013. But Rockhold, he hasn't went over that. That spin kick was tremendous. So Vitor Belfort's striking skill, I mean, it's not just his hands. A lot of times we talk about how quick his hands are and how powerful they are, and that's definitely true. His boxing is legit. But, I mean, look at that spin kick he landed on a guy like Rockhold. So he could beat you all sorts of ways on the feet. And if Henderson was smart, he'd try to get this fight to the ground and just try to control Vitor Belfort, because he can do that. I think he's more than capable of doing that. Both these guys have a tendency to fade as the fight goes, but I don't think he's going to do that. I think he's in love with that H-bomb, and I think they're going to try to slug it out again, and I think he's probably going to end up on the wrong end of things. So I won't take too much time in this fight, honestly. It should be a pretty good fight because somebody's going to get knocked out in this spot, and that somebody's probably Hendo. I hope not, because I'm going to be pulling for the guy, man. Honestly, I have a lot of respect for Hendo, and I would like to see him get some redemption here and pull that H-bomb off like he did against Bosch in his last fight. But my head says he's probably not going to do it, obviously. So I'm going to pick Vitor Belfort to win again against Dan Henderson, but I am hoping I'm wrong here.
I think this one's pretty straightforward, honestly. I mean, Vitor Belfort and Dan Henderson have been fighting for ages. I mean, all the way back into the UFC 10s. And so just because of that, you never quite know what's going to happen. And both guys have been aided by testosterone replacement therapy throughout their careers at moments. But, I mean, nobody really took the physical transformation like Vitor Belfort did recently. So we'll see how he performs. His last fight, he tested negative for all the steroids and ended up in a one-sided beatdown at the hands of a very motivated and angry Chris Weidman. Dan Henderson, on the other hand, since he's come off of testosterone replacement therapy, he definitely went on a bit of a downslide, but then, you know, last fight he picked up a surprising first-round finish over Tim Boach, who was a very tough guy. So we'll see how they perform against each other. I mean, Belfort, the last time they fought, I mean, it was not pretty. I mean, Belfort put Henderson away very quickly. The problem with Henderson, you know, he's 45 years old, is he just doesn't have those reflexes and the agility that he used to have. I mean, he's pretty much a one-trick pony at this point, and that one trick is good. That one trick is really good. But, I mean, if Dan Henderson cannot put you away with that H-bomb of his, that big right hand, then he's going to be in a lot of trouble. Vitor Belfort is more dangerous. He can land a higher variety of strikes. He's got the fast hands, but he also has, you know, really good kicks that he never showcased until, you know, the last couple years. So he is much more dangerous on the feet, especially from distance, than Henderson. He's quicker, he's more explosive, he's more dynamic. So as long as Belfort stays out of the range of that H-bomb, if he can just circle away from it, not into it like Michael Bisping or something, then I see Vitor Belfort, you know, easily picking up this win. Neither guy has great conditioning, but, you know, Dan Henderson really, really has slowed down late in fights, and it's cost him. I mean, he could have easily won the first Shogun fight, but then ended up, you know, just completely fading down the stretch. And, you know, he did end up getting that decision, but I mean, it probably should have been a draw. So this time around, I really do see Vitor continuing to go out there and take advantage of Dan Henderson's lack of agility and explosiveness. And Dan Henderson's chin is also a huge question mark at this point. I mean, this is a guy that used to be able to take anything from anybody, but I mean, it seems like he gets rocked or dropped in every single one of his fights lately. And I see Vitor taking advantage of that as well. So I think this fight is Vitor Belfort's to lose. And unless a miracle H-bomb comes out of nowhere, then Vitor Belfort should probably pick up a quick first round finish. So my pick is Vitor Belfort. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC Fight Night 77. Part 2 of the Premium Oddscast featuring our premium bets will be out this Friday night following the weigh-ins, so stay tuned for that if you're an MMA Oddsbreaker Premium member. Also, if you'd like to become a Premium member, just go to MMAoddsbreaker.com and you can sign up in the top right corner of our homepage for either Nick Kalikas's or Mike James' Premium bets. If we have a free play to give out, make sure to follow at MMAOBPremium on Twitter, because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAOddsbreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks for sponsors Five Dime Sportsbook and Countermove. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.